Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Ion Travel with Peter Greenberg, that's me, ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
This spring, if you'd rather spend time enjoying your lawn instead of trying to keep it alive, there's good news. TruGreen is the easiest and most affordable way to get a beautiful lawn. All you have to do is water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and even some things you might not even think of. They'll do all of it, while you can do literally anything else. With True Green, you could have your lawn looking as good as a putting green. That's not hyperbole. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. True Green offers a satisfaction guarantee, and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people guaranteed.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. The time is now more than ever to embrace the breathtaking, sinister, and shocking tales that can enthrall you, especially with brand new exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors who are guaranteed to keep you gripped, like Amy Tintera's Listen for the Lie. With exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors, captivating sound design, and dynamic performances, Audible brings these stories to life like never before. And as a member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
This is the Ion Travel Podcast with CBS News travel editor Peter Greenberg.
Hi there, everybody. Peter Greenberg here with another edition of the Ion Travel Podcast. This week, my extended conversation with the CEO of Hilton, Chris Nassetta. We'll touch on everything from changes in traveler behavior to housekeeping, from hotel room rates to room design. We'll talk about technology and how it can suppress or, in some cases, replace the conversation. We'll talk about room lighting. That's one of my pet peeves. And then I'll ask Nassetta to take off his CEO hat and put on his guest hat and tell me what he hates about his own hotels. We sat down at the Waldorf Astoria in Washington, D.C. That's the former Trump Hotel. And Waldorf Astoria is, coincidentally, one of the brands of the more than 7,165 hotels in the Hilton portfolio. That breaks down to 19 brands in 123 countries. Oh yeah, one more thing. That number is rising even as you hear this.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Mr. Chris Nassetta, welcome.
Hey, Peter. Thanks for having me. This is my hometown, born and raised in Washington, D.C. and the surrounds.
I'm glad I caught you here then.
Yeah, it's not often I'm here. Last time I saw you, we were in Riyadh, I think.
We were in Saudi Arabia. Yes. That's correct. So let's try to get an overview of where we've been for the last 2.5 years. Coming out of the pandemic, you and I actually did an interview for CBS News at the beginning.
Yeah. You were in the back of a van, as I recall.
No, that was a separate interview. No, I'm talking about the interview we did.
We're not going to talk about what you were doing on public radio. But.
No, but it was CBS Sunday Morning when we just...
Oh, we did, yeah, at the very beginning.
It was you and Oscar Munoz from United.
Yes, of course.
Talking about, you know, how you were trying to adapt to this brave new world that nobody knew how to adapt to.
Yeah.
What were the lessons that came out of that for you?
Listen, I think the first lesson, and you'll recall, you're a big travel tourism advocate, and you have been, and we appreciate that. You give us a great voice as an industry and help people understand how big and impactful we are in terms of economic growth and jobs and the like. But you recall in that interview and in those earlier days, let's say in the first and second quarter of 2020, people thought travel was, you know, dead. Like that because of COVID, obviously in the short term, people believed that it was going to be impactful. But I think people were really starting to believe that everything was going to be different, that people were never going to really want to travel for leisure the same way, that business travel was dead and gone because Zoom was here, meetings and events, people wouldn't feel comfortable, congregating in that kind of format. And so it's sort of, you asked me what the lesson is. You know, the lesson in life is never try and project off the top or the bottom during a crisis. And so many people were projecting off the bottom of the crisis. I somewhat famously in that interview and 50 others, because I was a bit of a poster child having done this for 40 years and, you know, as impacted as our industry was, I said many, many times on every network, of course, none more important than CBS, that
the sucking up can stop.
The right sucking up. Okay, can fine. Stop. Okay. That when we get through this, things will look a lot more like they did than they do. And in fact, my argument was that there's a high likelihood that people will have a burning desire to travel more, that this is going to reinforce a mega trend that had been going on pre-COVID, which is people spending more of their disposable income on experiences versus things. And so, listen, you didn't roll your eyes at me, but a lot of people did. I mean, I got a lot of chuckles, a lot of folks that were skeptical of that. If you fast forward to today, that's sort of where we, not to say patting I'm not trying to pat myself on the back and say I'm right, but ultimately I think I am being proven right. And so the lesson I think, in leadership is, to sort of have a steady approach. Don't project off bottoms. Don't project off tops. Keep a steady hand on the wheel. Make sure you have a plan and a strategy to deal with a crisis, because there were serious issues that we all had to deal with in the business. But as part of that, also make sure that you're sort of looking down the road and preparing for recovery. I think the greatest mistake I've seen people make, not just in COVID, although I did see it made during COVID, but in every crisis that I've been managing through for the 40 years of my career, is that you get mired in, in what's going on in the moment. And in the beginning you have to, but you lose sight of what the opportunities might be on the other side. And you're not in a good position when you do get to the other side. So I think the lessons are, that travel is an unstoppable force for good. People, humanity wants it. They want it more now. And, keeping sort of a steady approach to how you manage your way through a crisis, I think pays great dividends in the long run.
I was noticing a redefinition, if you will, of traveler behavior, meaning that during the pandemic, people had a chance to save some money. People then wanted to get out of the gate as soon as they could and travel. They weren't necessarily price sensitive. They were traveling at any cost. I think you and the rest of the hotel industry are recipients of very high rates in the rooms.
Indeed we are. But
something else happened. They made a decision, and I call it the Last Supper mentality, where they don't want to buy material goods. They don't want to buy new jewelry or clothing or cars or electronic items. They want experiences. And I look at the metric of the shippers. So I'm checking in with UPS and FedEx in July, August, and September of last year. And what am I seeing? They're closing stores. They're parking planes. When was the last time you heard of FedEx parking planes in October or November before Christmas? I could see it coming. Yep. And sure enough, consumer spending dropped during Christmas.
Yep.
And
well, who didn't see? I'm not going to pick. But if you think about what was going on in the world of tech, what you see today and all the layoffs going on in tech and retail. Yeah, I think, a bunch of industries sort of reformatted their strategy in a world where they thought, COVID, the COVID norm was going to be the new norm. And the reality is they were wrong. To my earlier point, before COVID, we had a very significant trend towards disposable income being spent on experiences versus things. During COVID, it completely reversed itself because it had to. And post-COVID, because of what you're suggesting, people had not just money in their pocket. And by the way, the governments around the world gave them money. They had savings. They got given money by governments. But it was much deeper and different psychology. They had PTSD, if you will, having been locked away, not being able to see places, see family, have those experiences. And so the trend before was powerful. It just became much more powerful on the other side. The other thing that's going on that I talk about a lot with our team is greater mobility. So part of this is, you know, we talk a lot about bleisure, you know, the blending of business and leisure travel, which is a real thing. You know, but what that is being driven by to a degree is enhanced mobility. What does that mean? People have more time. They have more flexibility. The traditional office environment, while it's trended back more towards what it was, it's not what it was, and it probably never will be again. The other thing that's happening as a result is that office environments are being reimagined and reduced in a way where people then have more of a need to visit home offices, to do training seminars, innovation sessions in different ways. All of those things mean that people are more mobile, right? So they're moving around more. If you look at, you know, time and eternity in our industry, and you've been around, you and I have been doing this a long time, mobility's been the most powerful force, both enabling, you know, the enablement of mobility, okay, and creating more demand for travel and tourism. That's been in the form over the years of transportation, you know, high-speed rail, low-cost airlines, hotel infrastructure, segmentation, different price points, the rent a car, all these, you know, technological innovations that connected the world. Now you have this next phase in mobility that is a reimagining of how people work to a degree that is giving them the flexibility to be able to be mobile in a world where their technology does allow them to sort of work from anywhere. And thus, ultimately, I think, creates a significant enhancement in demand in our business.
An unplanned intersection.
An unplanned intersection.
Wow. You know, I go back, you talk about what happened during the pandemic. I go back before that to another crisis, the 2008-2009 economic debacle, and I remember walking into one of your hotels. It's not there anymore. It was the old Hilton in Paris.
Yeah.
And I walked in.
Eiffel Tower. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I walked in, and the place was oversold with Americans. People were crammed in the lobbies. They couldn't. And I'm like, did you not hear about the economic debacle? Could you tell me why you're here? And they said, well, we knew about it. Well, why are you here? We figured if we didn't come now, we'd never go.
Yeah.
So that's the last.
And that's what we're just in the early days of seeing that tailwind, which is pent up demand for people wanting to, you know, now that borders are broadly open and some of the last borders, which would be in Asia and China, are starting to open. People want to have those experiences in that cultural exchange. And that will be a huge tailwind of demand for, I think, a number of years.
You know, we were talking before about the changing dynamic of traveler behavior, expectations and demands. One of the things I remember so well, talking to you and some of your counterparts prior to the pandemic, was there was a time not that long ago when you were opening up one new hotel like every 24 hours. Are you still doing that?
We're still doing that. Last year we opened just under one hotel a day. This year I think we will open up more, significantly more than a hotel a day somewhere in the world.
Okay.
So we're still doing it. We never really stopped growing during the pandemic, even though travel stopped for a period of time, almost completely. The momentum that we had in a 400,000 plus room pipeline in every region of the world kept moving.
What was the region that was moving faster than anywhere else?
What region was moving in the beginning? It was probably growth rate, Asia Pacific.
Right.
That slowed, you know, as a result of, you know, what happened in China over the last year. But expectation is that's going to pick up meaningfully, particularly in the second half of this year. So by number of hotels, it's still the United States because we have such a big installed base. But by percentage growth rates, Asia Pacific is definitely the fastest growing.
When you talk about the United States.
And I think it will be for decades and decades and decades. It's just, you look at the population, you look at most of the companies, including ours, we have a big presence in that region of the world, but relative to the billions of people in the population in that part of the world, we're all early days. Certainly at Hilton, we're early days.
And so many of those hotels are not really being opened for me. They're being opened for them.
Correct. Yeah. They are. I mean, most, it's funny, when I came to Hilton 15 going on 16 years ago, we had 5 hotels in China, and the business was 90% inbound international business, Western business. Fast forward today, open or in the pipeline, we have over 1,000 hotels, and it's almost the inverse, okay? China's the data right now is a little garbled given the transition off of zero COVID to join the rest of the world, but it's almost the flip, which is 90% domestic, 10% international inbound business. And that's not to do with COVID. That's just they're building out the travel and tourism infrastructure.
Not to mention their air routes.
Correct.
But now let's talk about this country and air routes, because we're seeing airlines stopping service to so many cities, secondary and tertiary cities, Toledo, Eureka, California, Dubuque, Iowa, Islip, New York. I mean, I can go on to 37 separate cities that either have seriously diminished air service or no air service at all.
And that's a problem. I mean, what's interesting that's happened, and you know this, but many of your audience in your audience wouldn't know it, is pre-COVID, if you look at our business, like two-thirds of our business in the U.S., we have 5,000 plus or minus hotels in the U.S., two-thirds of the business was fly to, one-third was drive to. If you look at like the fourth quarter of last year, it's inverted. Two-thirds of it is drive to, one-third is fly to. Part of that is that people are traveling differently. They're traveling shorter distances and they're driving. Some of that is just by choice. It came out of COVID. Some of it is because it is, you know, air travel is so difficult. You know, the waits, the cancellations and the like. So it's really important that as a country and as an industry, we sort of get back on the horse, if you will. I'm the incoming chair for U.S. travel. We held a press conference here very recently, and we were talking about this. I mean, there are a lot of issues for inbound international travel related to wait times for
we're
visas.
Talking about visa wait times,
but also the issues with the FAA and the outages that we've had and modernization of the FAA infrastructure so that we can start to ease some of the pain in the system. But now, part of the pain is being eased by, you know, by virtue of what the airlines are doing. Like all of us in the travel and tourism industry, it's been hard to get people. And so now we're getting the people, they're getting the people, they're getting the pilots, they're getting the flight attendants, they're getting,
are you getting the people?
And we are too, but you got to train them. And so we're in this mode of like bringing a lot of people on and having to get them trained. So it is important that the air transport system in the country and around the world gets more efficient. I think part of that is time and investment by the airlines, which they are doing. Part of it is investment into the infrastructure from a governmental point of view.
We talked about Toledo just briefly, but if American, United, and Delta no longer serve Toledo, and the only airline that does goes in once a week from like Myrtle Beach, that's not helping your hotel in Toledo.
That's not helping our, no, then everybody's driving and it becomes a regional hub, which is not ideal. And so in the end, I think, you know, the cities will be served if they have the demand as, you know, the airline industry stabilizes. Toledo will have demand. Columbus will have demand. Cleveland, you know, there'll be a lot of secondary markets, but the large cities around the country that haven't had as much service that I think we'll get that service back.
Because I'm thinking if you have a business in Toledo and your customers can't get to you,
it's
you're
a
at a competitive disadvantage.
It's a problem. Right now, people are driving and they're driving longer distances. So they are getting to you, but over time, that's not how we want it to happen.
It can't be sustained.
It's not sustainable.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than just a house. It's your home, the place that's filled with memories. The early days of figuring it out, to the later years of still figuring it out. For the place you've put down roots, trust Amica Home Insurance. Amica, empathy is our best policy.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery.
The jobs reports have been coming out. They've been very good for the United States in terms of unemployment and number of jobs filled. But the hospitality section, restaurants, and that entire sphere, it's been a continuing problem. How have you fixed it? Or how are you going about fixing it?
Yeah, the problem has eased. On a scale of 1 to 10, a year ago it was a 10, and right now I'd say, you know, it's probably a 4 or a 5. So we are finding people. People are migrating back from industries that were COVID darlings.
Can you answer one question?
Yeah.
Where did they go?
Well, some of them stayed home, and some of them went into retail and other industries that were surging during COVID. And so some of those are migrating back, and other people are realizing, you know, the benefits of being in travel and tourism, which are not insignificant. And so we are attracting great talent now. I wouldn't say we're back to where we were, but we're getting closer. And now, as I was saying, same with the airlines, you know, there's a component of other people have less experience. And so we're going through a training process. The other thing that we're doing is just trying to get smarter in how we access, you know, different pools of talent, people, you know, gig workers. You know, there are a lot of people that want to work, but they don't want to work in a traditional way. They don't want to work a 40-hour week.
They
want to work two shifts a week. And so we've always had seasonal help in various locations. We hadn't really programmatically figured out how to crack the code and do it with the use of technology more broadly, and we are. So we are getting thousands and thousands of people that are working, you know, in a little bit different way in our system and enjoying it. So I think we're on the road to recovery on the labor side for sure.
Have you gotten your arms around housekeeping?
Yes, but it's still the biggest challenge area in the industry. Meaning those have been the hardest jobs to fill, and those will continue to be the hardest jobs to fill. But we are broadly finding the people and figuring out how to best serve our customers and what they really want. One of the things that we did during COVID, partly as it relates to, you know, the issues of health and hygiene and people's desire not to have, you know, a housekeeper or anybody in their room when they were there, we went to an opt-in model where if you want housekeeping daily, if you're there,
you
ask for it. You can go on the app and do it quite efficiently now. But they giving the customer the option. You find out that, you know, a lot of people do want daily housekeeping on overnight stays for multiple days, but a lot of people don't. Not, you know, that it's totally unrelated to COVID. They just don't. And so that's taken some pressure off. But really, that's been more about choice and control. You know, in the end, you know, we serve customers, and my belief is always that giving customers more choice and control in an ability to efficiently customize their experience to meet their needs is the best way to go. And ultimately it keeps people happy, keeps them coming back. It allows, you know, and that's what we're here to do, is deliver great experiences.
The one thing you got rid of during COVID, which I want to thank you for, although it's starting to sneak back in, Chris, is all the paper products on the table and the desks. And
It hasn't been sneaking in our hotels. We're not bringing that back.
Good.
We're not bringing all of that back. And the other thing that we've done with amenities, like bathroom amenities, it's not 100% rolled out, but it will be certainly by the end of this year, bulk amenities that are scaled depending on the price point, but all very high quality. You know, it's more friendly from the environmental point of view. And it's a heck of a lot more efficient. And honestly, the products are better, and it's a lot less clutter and easier to use.
And of course, you know, for me, you know, I always wanted the housekeeping, right? But I go to some hotels and they say, oh, we only come once every 4 days. We'll give
you,
too.
We'll give you house key. When you come, you just stay with Hilton.
Just for me?
Peter, no, just for everybody. We love all our customers. You stay with Hilton, you can get housekeeping every night if you want it.
Is that your mission statement?
That's my commitment to you and every other customer.
Thank you. I feel special now.
Yeah.
Let's cut back to the visa wait times, because I'm looking at some of those numbers, and this is putting America at a competitive disadvantage, where people in certain countries have to wait over a year to even get an appointment to get a visa.
Yeah, it's insane. Yeah, there are some countries that are up to 600 to 800 days of wait time. Now, the reality is you can understand why this was deprioritized during COVID, because we closed our borders. And so, you know, you built a new muscle memory from the standpoint of how the government's operating. They weren't worried about how many people can we get here and how much economic activity and how many jobs. They were worried about safety and security, the health in a global pandemic. So we just have to get back on the horse. I've said that a couple of times. We have to go back to what we had done before. If you go back to the Obama administration, I was deeply in the middle of, in the early years of Obama, the same issue. By the way, same kind of description. You had many markets, whether it was Brazil, India, that were, you know, 3-4, China, 500-day wait times.
We were talking about these ridiculously long wait times for foreigners to come to the United States, which is a big source of revenue for this country.
Yeah, we had the same set of issues in the early days of the Obama administration. To their credit, they had an intense focus on getting it down to 21 days or less, and they did it. We just have to do the same thing, and so we're starting that dialogue. I recently was part of a press conference. As I mentioned, I'm stepping in as chair of U.S. Travel, and the CEO and I had a bunch of the press here to start to bring visibility to the issue. We're obviously working with the administration, and now's the time. As I said, it hasn't been a focus, and that's not anybody's fault. It's because of the circumstances of a pandemic. But now's time, if we want to continue to drive international tourism, drive economic growth, drive jobs growth, and importantly, drive exports, which travel and tourism is, you know, inbound international travel is one of the great surpluses we can drive for exports. It's time to tackle this issue.
Well, isn't it ironic, and this, by the way, certainly predates the pandemic, that we're the only developed country that I know that does not have a cabinet level minister of tourism.
But we're doing something about that.
And what are we doing?
Within the Department of Commerce, there's going to be somebody not cabinet level, but one step below, as I understand.
Well, you just said the three magic words: one step below.
Yeah, I know. Well, we got to start somewhere. We've been working hard just to get this.
All right, I'm going to ask you to take your CEO hat off for a second and put your guest hat on. When you check into a hotel, what's the one thing you hate?
Waiting.
I'm waiting.
No, waiting. I hate I hate waiting.
I was having fun with that.
So the way I get around that is I use our digital key, which is in every hotel we have in the world. I can select my room, get my key, do what I need to do. Because most of the time when I get into hotels, by the way, I get very good treatment, as you would guess. It's very rare.
I'm shocked.
It's very rare that I can sneak in. But most of the time I'm getting in very late, like you probably. I'm traveling for business. I could be flying in. I'm exhausted. I may want to have a little bite to eat and go do 100 emails, get a bed. So, you know, I get great treatment, but the one thing that I think none of us want is the way you want what you want when you want it. And so that's, I think, one of the great things that's happening, certainly at Hilton, and I, you know, maybe some others, but in the industry, is really driving more technological innovation that gives you control of your whole experience in the palm of your hand, just like a lot of other aspects of your life. So that the things that might drive you crazy won't, because we're going to allow you to customize it and manage it in a frictionless way.
But to be devil's advocate on this, what gets lost in that sometimes is the art of the conversation.
Correct, but we'll always, there's always going to be somebody for Peter Greenberg who likes talking a lot to people.
Stop
at the front desk. There's always going to be
somebody.
No, but
you know what I'm saying.
No, but what the idea of technology is, listen, we're a business of people serving people. I say this to our team all the time. We always will be. The idea is to take some of the more routinized things that can be done really well digitally, so that you free up the people to curate, so that when you have a real issue, you're not dealing, you know, with your phone and dealing with us digitally, you're dealing with a human. But all of the things that can be really simply done in a digital context, are done that way so that people have more time to curate better experiences.
Now, you've now checked into the room. What's the one thing you want changed?
Well, we do a really good job, so I don't have a lot of, but I mean, the thing is, here's what customers really want. They don't want a lot of clutter. They want the room to be clean. They want a really comfortable bed. They want great pillows that maybe that where they have options. Lighting. They want adequate lighting.
Can we talk about lighting for a second?
I'm going to keep going. They want adequate lighting. They want adequate lighting in the room. They want adequate lighting in the bathroom. They want enough room to put their things down in the bathroom. They want hot water. They want pressure. They want to be able to turn the water
on.
They want to be able to turn the water on without getting, you know, cold water in their face.
Let's start with lighting.
And they want, but by the way, they want a lot of.
I got to go back to lighting.
They want a lot of other things, but if, you know, those basic things and at different price points, you know, they're brought to life a little bit differently. If you get all of those things right, okay, you're a long way. You do it really reliably all the time. Great sheets, great beds, great pillows. By the way, I shouldn't forget TVs. Great, you know, great TVs.
With remote controls that you can understand.
With remote control or your own phone, you know, you can drive the remote on your own with the use of your own phone. Great lighting, great hot water, great pressure.
Can I talk to you about lighting again?
Yeah, you can. A lot of hotels don't have enough lighting. We've been really working hard at that.
I mean, any hotel that gives me nothing but mood lighting puts me in a very bad mood.
Me too.
Good.
I agree. And we're working very hard on that.
See, I had to talk about lighting. Yeah. Sorry.
No, I think you're right. I think you come into a lot of hotel rooms and you have to walk around and turn like 20 lights on to be able to see what you're doing. We don't want it to be that complicated.
Exactly. And the last thing I thought about is hotel designers have put really lovely marble floors on the bathrooms that you're going to slip and break your skull.
Yeah, that I don't think a lot of marble is being used these days. There's a lot of other materials. We do use some marbles, but there's
marble on the sinks. You got
And there is a way to finish marble where you really aren't going to slip, which we think we can do. So I agree. I don't like slippery surfaces.
Well, this
either.
Proves only one thing. I'm checking into my next hotel with you.
You got to. Absolutely. I assume you already do.
You have a very personal history with this hotel.
I do. This hotel, I've been working on one way or another since the early 1980s. My first job out of business school, I was hired to be the assistant project manager of the Willard Hotel, an office building complex renovation, which was done by PADC right down the block.
By the way, that's where the word lobbying came
from. That is where the word, that is where the word lobbying was invented. And I was a young guy and I was, you know, walking the streets of Pennsylvania Avenue and all of Washington. I worked for Oliver Carr for many years. I ended up running the development group. And so DC was, you know, my family was a Washington, DC based development. My father and uncle were developers in the area. So I was sort of like that. This is all I did. I would walk every block, look at every building. And this building went through lots of different states of evolution. It wasn't just the post office. It was, you know, built that way and acted in that capacity, but it was a retail center. The GSA tried to figure out a bunch of different uses, office, retail, and none of them really worked.
And back in 1971, they tried to demolish it.
So, you know, fast forward a bunch of years, I had driven by it 1,000 times, always thought it was one of the most beautiful buildings. By the way, if you drive down the GW Parkway from the Virginia side, which I do all the time going to the airport, you see the clock tower and the Washington Monument. I mean, this is one of the most iconic buildings and towers on earth. And every time I would drive down the parkway, which is daily for the most part, I would look at it and say, someday, like, this is the building. This would be the perfect place for a Waldorf Astoria in Washington. This is my hometown. I was born and raised here. I've always believed we need to have a Waldorf Astoria representation in this market, and this was the building. So it comes up for bid. It's going to be a hotel. Finally, the GSA decides that, you know, this is the right path. Obviously, I think they were right. And I went down. My team is making the pitch with a partner, and they say, do you want to make the pitch with us? I said, you know, and we're opening, as I said, more than a hotel. I can't make every pitch. I said, this is my hometown. I've been gazing
you
at
went.
This
you
building.
Went to the pitch.
I went to make the pitch. I went right after Ivanka Trump made the pitch. She obviously won. We lost for a whole bunch of reasons. So I was very saddened that my dream would not come true. And of course, you know, they ended up redeveloping it to what it has become. But it always was sort of front and center for me that at some point, if something were to happen, if it were to become available, I still thought it was the best place on earth in Washington, D.C. to have a Waldorf Astoria.
And surprise, surprise, and surprise, it became available.
And surprise, surprise, it became available. We worked very hard with a partner of ours for a very extended period of time. And here we are today in the Waldorf Astoria, Washington, D.C.
I mean, at the time you were bidding, you were not the only bidder, right?
It wasn't we were
just,
not.
It wasn't just Donald Trump. It was your competitors at Marriott.
It was.
And
everybody.
Everybody. Hyatt and Intercon. Everybody wanted it.
Everybody wanted it. Everybody wanted it. None of us got it. The Trump family won it. They did a marvelous job with it physically. It's beautiful. And we just wanted to make sure that it became a Waldorf Astoria, which we were able to accomplish ultimately.
So good things come to those who wait.
Good things, yes. Yeah. So it only took me from 1984, I don't know, call it plus or minus 40 years of, you know, patience and diligence. As I said, you got to keep a steady hand on the wheel.
Did you get a good deal?
I think so, yeah. I think it'll work out great for everybody.
And if you walk in this hotel, the renovation and restoration work that they did as a historic building, you got to give the Trumps credit.
You got to give them credit. By the way, for those that haven't been in this building, come see this building. I think it is one of the most unique hotels and pieces of real estate in America today. I mean, you could feel like you're in old Europe in Paris or London. There's just not buildings like this.
You know, if you look at the steelwork inside the lobby,
it's extraordinary.
You feel like you're in an old European train station.
You do. It is extraordinary in a way. Like, there are very few hotels in the world that have the character that this, you know, wide hallways, very high ceilings, just volumes of space. Nobody can afford to build those things in today's world. So, it's really unique. We're very excited to be part of it.
And are you educating the GSA as to what a hotel means to them?
Yes, we are. We're doing great. By the way, it's off to a roaring start. You know, we're already at or above our expectations and how it would perform. So we're doing
your mission
great.
Is done now?
No, it's never done. Now we just got to keep tweaking it. We've just opened with Jose Andres, a spectacular new restaurant, Bazaar, bringing that to Washington, D.C. Jose is an iconic restaurateur, an artist, that is very well known in D.C. So we're bringing huge amount of life and energy into this building on top of what is an iconic architectural statement.
And by the way, if you get a chance to go up to the clock tower, which I have, and hopefully not, hopefully not on a windy day, but if you do... the best views of the whole city.
It's extraordinary. As I say, I think the best view of this hotel, drive down the GW Parkway, which if you haven't done, is one of the most beautiful drives on earth. To drive down from Roslyn to Mount Vernon, it is an extraordinary drive. But driving down the Potomac River, you see all of the monuments, and this is one of the monuments. It's not technically, but it shows up right along with the Washington
Monument. And it's
the
second tallest building In Washington,
second tallest only to the Washington Monument.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, were you surprised that you've been able to do this as a hotel?
No. I mean, as I said, I kept it in my sights for a long time, and I'm a very patient, diligent person. It took a lot longer than I'd like. But by the way, it's not the only luxury. Luxury is hard. It takes, you know, buildings like this only get built so often. So if you think about like the Waldorf Astoria in Beverly Hills, that took 15 years of a lot of people's lives, including mine, to, you know, from the first, you know, idea to getting it done. The Waldorf Astoria Monarch Beach, you know, in Southern California on the beach, probably 20 years of effort and diligence and patience to find the right, you know, sort of setup to make that happen. Waldorf Astoria Amsterdam, you know, took centuries. You know, the buildings there are old townhouses that we pulled together and left intact, but built a hotel within them. So that was centuries in the making. I wasn't around for the beginning of that, but you know, these really iconic luxury hotels take lots of time and patience and diligence. But when you get it done, walk around this hotel or walk around Amsterdam or walk around Beverly Hills, it's worth it. I mean, they're really special places.
My thanks to Chris Nassetta, and my thanks to you for listening to this Ion Travel podcast. For more conversations with the world's leaders in travel, as well as answers to your travel questions, be sure to rate and review this podcast wherever you happen to listen to podcasts. And for all the breaking travel news, just put out the Do Not Disturb sign and then log on to petergreenberg.com.
The Ion Travel Podcast is produced by Amanda Morris and Anthony Protis Chung. For more content from Peter Greenberg and the Ion Travel team, visit petergreenberg.com. Ion Travel is a production of CBS News Radio.
Hey, Prime members, Peter Greenberg here. You can listen to Ion Travel ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today, and you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. And before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at Wondery.com.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and host of the Money Watch podcast. This is the show where your money is not scary. It is a show that's all about you. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and entertaining insights on your money, and maybe more importantly, on your life. Follow Money Watch wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app.
Are you ready for an all-new season of Survivor? You better be, because Survivor 46 is here, and it's 90 minutes of twists and turns you don't want to miss. Better yet, after each episode, there's a brand new episode of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. Each week, we go behind the scenes of the episode's biggest moments, taking you into the how and the why things happened. And this season, we're very lucky to be joined by an expert, the winner of Survivor 45, Dee Valladares.
What is up? I'm thrilled to be joining this team and to be giving you my take on how and the why players made the moves they did, what it takes to outwit, outplay, and outlast, and to ask Jeff some questions, because even after 26 days out there, there is still a lot for me to uncover.
Bring it, D. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.